They don't particularly care what the public think about them because they're selling to governments. As long as governments, and particularly the UK government, is willing to continue buying and continue giving a preferential treatment, it doesn't matter if there's a couple of embarrassing stories as long as they don't stick around for too long.
It could be business back to normal. But at least the issue of corruption in the arms trade has been aired yet again. This is Anastasia Kershaw calling from London for Free Speech Radio News.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez. Free Speech Radio News is made possible in part by an underwriting grant from the graduate student organization at Stony Brook University. This edition of Free Speech Radio News will be rebroadcast tomorrow at 6:30 a.m. here at WUSB Stony Brook.
And it's currently 5:59, which means that you get an extra minute this week of Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour. And I just printed out the news because I like to start every show with a very quick reading of the Associated Press's version of what's going on in the world as opposed to Free Speech Radio News. And it's always quite different. But today it's really... I had to turn the bright lights on in this room because the ink on our teletype machine is so light that I can't even read it under the usual dim lights that I'm used to. So, to save my eyes, I'm just going to, and also probably to save our sanity a bit, I'm going to just start reading some of the stories, and if I don't like them, I'm going to stop. I'll tell you why I don't like them, but there's no point wasting your time and mine with this kind of nonsense. Let's see. Let's start with the top story here. You know, I can't even see what's... Okay, let's try this. Prosecution witnesses continue to take the stands in the sniper trials in the Virginia courtrooms. Okay, all right. We've seen enough of that, right? Found the guy guilty, and now everybody is debating whether or not they should shoot him. It's interesting. I saw a poll about that. I think it was on CNN or one of those news sites. It was something like 88% of the people wanted the death penalty. And I know that 88% of Americans do not support the death penalty. You know, it might be a majority. I'll grant that much, but it certainly isn't 88%. So I just have a feeling these online polls really aren't as accurate as they might want you to believe. All right. What else? God, I can't read this at all. Unbelievable. I mean, how hard is it to change the ribbon on the teletype? How hard is it? I've never done it. I've never been able to succeed. I really don't know how hard it is. I mean, it could be impossible for all I know. We might have to buy a new teletype machine. Let's see. A TV report says a sexual abuse allegation is the reason for a search of Michael Jackson. Oh, no, not Michael Jackson again. No, absolutely not. I don't care. Oh, you know what this means? Do you know what this means? That's it. It doesn't matter what happens in the rest of the world for the next 6 months at least. It's going to be Michael Jackson, this, that, everywhere, you know? Aliens landing from Mars? Nah, that's, you can do that in the entertainment section, but you're going to deal with Michael Jackson first, second, and third news story. Oh, boy, here we go, all over again. I don't know what to do with this. Okay, I'm going to just try a couple more, then I'm going to give up in frustration. This sounds interesting. The U.S. military is describing them as jihad sign-up sheets. Okay, jihad sign-up sheets. That sounds interesting. Let me get real close to this piece of paper now. In a continuing crackdown on insurgents in Iraq, U.S. soldiers searched an area west of Baghdad and found what's being described as anti-coalition paperwork. anti-coalition paperwork. Imagine that. Imagine that. Anti-coalition paperwork in a country that's being invaded by the coalition. Boy, one area resident was detained. The military says he's suspected of financing the production and placement of roadside bombs. Financing the production and placement. It's not a Hollywood movie, you know, it's a bomb. You just pretty much build it, place it somewhere, and stand back and watch. That's my understanding, anyway. I'm not a bomb maker, I'm not a bomb setter, but it's, you know, it's something that I've gleaned from many years of watching television. Anyway, I wonder if they're going to catch the director next. Meantime, U.S. warplanes have been pounding suspected insurgent positions in central Iraq. The military reports a dozen safe houses were destroyed. So much for them being safe houses, along with mortar firing positions and other ambush sites. I don't know, is it just me, or does this imply that they were just kind of, like, ignoring all this before? Yeah, we knew where the safe houses were, we knew where the ambush sites were, but, you know, we figured, hey, live and let live. We are the army, after all. I don't know. I'm just wondering if they're just throwing artillery into the air, hoping that it might discourage people from firing at them. Anyway, there are no reports of casualties. Well, who would report it anyway? You know, the United States controls the media there. It's being described as the largest bombing campaign in central Iraq since the end of major combat. I'm wondering, when are they going to declare major combat has begun again? You know, more and more of our soldiers are dying now than during the war, it seems. With helicopters being shot down, and bombs going off, and all that kind of a thing. It's pretty gruesome. It's pretty gruesome. And I don't know where it's going to end at this point. It's kind of fascinating to watch and to see how the rest of the world is dealing with it. One thing I really have a problem with, though, I don't understand how they can justify this. I see this in the media. I see this in the government. I see this everywhere. When a bunch of soldiers are killed, when a helicopter is shot down, it's referred to as terrorism. How can that be terrorism when you're in a war? Oh, yeah, okay, you're in a war against terrorism, I suppose, but to the people in Iraq, you're in a war for their land, and they're fighting back against an invading power. Now, yeah, you may not agree that they're right, okay? You may think that we're providing them with all the things that they want. They just don't know it yet. You know, freedom, justice, McDonald's, all that kind of thing. We're there for those purposes, and we're there to help them. And they just don't realize that, and that's why they keep shooting at us. Okay, fine, they're wrong. But does that make them terrorists? Or misguided? Misguided freedom fighters or whatnot? I don't know, it's... when you invade a country, you have to expect some kind of resistance, regardless of how right you think you are. That's what war is. And it's sad that people are just starting to realize that now. Over to England. Boy, it's starting. You know, we talked about this last week. They were turning on the fan last week. And this week, well, they've already hurled the objects at the fan. And I guess in the next day or so, well, you know what's going to happen. President Bush, yes, that's right, President Bush is over in England right now, and England has never seen anything like this before. A huge security operation is underway for President George W. Bush. Scotland Yard has increased the scale of the 5 million pound police operation to 14,000 officers for Bush's three-day trip. Now, tens of thousands, if not more, demonstrators are expected to march on London streets. And recent opinion polls that have been made very public suggest that the majority of Brits, back the visit of George W. Bush. And basically, Bush is the first U.S. president to have a state visit to the U.K. since Woodrow Wilson in 1918. What that means is he was officially invited by the Queen, and he stays at Buckingham Palace. Now, I believe other presidents have done that, too, since then. But there's something different about this visit that makes it officially a state visit. I don't know. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I just can't believe that they're affording all this, you know, luxury and and ceremony to someone the likes of George W. Anyway, despite the huge numbers of police preparing for the visit, a 61-year-old grandmother managed to climb the front gates of Buckingham Palace on Monday to launch a protest before she came down voluntarily. That's right, she came down by herself. She wasn't shot down or dragged down. She came down on her own. Mrs. Lindis Percy, 61 years old, of Hull, who was arrested and later released on bail, said she was amazed she had been able to unfurl a banner declaring Mr. Bush was not welcome in the UK. "My purpose was peaceful, but the world is in such a state that anything could have happened. It is deeply concerning for all of us." Tony Blair, Prime Minister Tony Blair, says this is the right moment for the for us to stand firm with the United States in defeating terrorism wherever it is and delivering us safely from what I genuinely believe to be the security threat of the 21st century. "Now is not the time to waver. Now is the time to see it through." Well, you can say what you want about Tony Blair, and I do. But at least he can put forth his opinion and sound intelligent and argue and back up what he believes in. If you ever watch him in front of Parliament, really being challenged on many fronts, he does a pretty good job. I mean, I disagree with everything he says, but the presentation does make a difference. Anyway, extra police have been placed at ports and airports. They're checking people arriving on Eurostar trains from France. Scotland Yard's Deputy Assistant Commissioner Andy Trotter said the Metropolitan Police's decision to use almost half its numbers of officers during the President's visit had been taken primarily because of security concerns. "We're on a very high level of alert at the moment. We obviously have the visit of the President coinciding with that, and we've got to make sure that London is kept safe and the visit goes well. Mr. Bush will also be protected by hundreds of armed guards from the United States, and get this, they will not be granted diplomatic immunity. And they'll be subject to the British legal system if they shoot anybody." That's a promise from the Home Office. Now, Mr. Bush has shrugged off the prospect of protests, saying he supports free speech and expects the trip to be fantastic. It's funny how when you support free speech, you have to have all these armed guards and helicopters and airplanes and guns everywhere, you know, just to watch over it. I mean, they even have airplanes in the sky to guard against hijacked airplanes that apparently would be on their way to London to crash into Bush or something like that. I don't know. I mean, you know, Vladimir Putin did not get this kind of protection. And he's arguably a pretty important guy, right? He was in London a couple of months ago, I believe. Nowhere near this kind of insanity. The thing is, when you bring it up to this level, it kind of, you know, it's upping the ante. It's making it a challenge. So people want to defeat the security all the more. People want to cause mayhem. Not the people in the streets of London, I don't think. I really doubt that. Those are peaceful protesters, and you're going to be seeing a lot of them, presumably, in the next day or so. Probably with all kinds of slanted press reports, making them out to be monsters and terrorist supporters and all that kind of thing. But, I don't know, when you have that kind of paranoia, that kind of military response, it's worse than the worst-case scenario, I think. I mean, yeah, someone crashes a plane into Bush, okay, we get Cheney. You know, we haven't really accomplished anything, have we, if that's our goal? It's really kind of pathetic. I don't know how much worse it's going to get. Anyway, a Stop Bush rally will be held near Euston Station, that's Euston, in London, for anyone listening over there. Actually, that's probably happening right now. Or maybe it's finished by now. It's probably about 11 o'clock over there. On Wednesday, though, when the President is due at Buckingham Palace, there's going to be an alternative state procession, including a big red peace bus. London Mayor Ken Livingstone is holding a peace party in City Hall on Wednesday, attended by many groups opposed to the war in Iraq. That's pretty pretty cool, I think. If you want a picture of the car that Bush is traveling in, no, it's legitimate. It's not some kind of terrorist site here. It's the BBC, in fact. Go over to the news story entitled Massive Security for Bush Visit on bbcnews.com. We'll get you there. And you'll see a picture of the President's armored car, along with all kinds of diagrams as to what it is, how it works. For instance, it has a special armored plated covering. It's a version of the Cadillac DeVille, and tires are meant to continue to work after they've been punctured. Yeah, and the driver can use night vision. The underside of the car is armor plated. Pretty cool. Wouldn't mind one myself. Anyway, we mentioned that England was on some kind of terror alert. That's right, they are. They're on the second highest terror alert. The security services have they've been put on their second highest state of alert amid intelligence of an Al-Qaeda attack. Now, they call theirs Severe General. Yeah. Sounds a bit more British, I guess. It's the internal Severe General Alert. It's said to be unconnected to President Bush's UK visit. It follows warnings about plans by Al-Qaeda supporters from North Africa. They know who's going to do it. They know where they're from. It's amazing how much information they have. The alert means security will be extra tight around potential targets. Sources say no attack is imminent, and there is no intelligence of a specific target. The warning comes as police plan the unprecedented security operation for Bush. The internal alerts, though, are for the security services only. They don't have this ridiculous color-coding system that we have here. It includes the police, the army, MI6, MI5. It's not usually made public. The UK is officially on high alert, but within this there is a tier of internal and usually secret levels, which have gone from substantial to severe general. BBC Home Affairs correspondent Margaret Gilmore said it was rare to be put on this higher alert, but the public should not necessarily be concerned. These are warnings very much for the security services. These are not warnings aimed at the public because there is not a lot the public can do about them. Boy, someone should tell that to Ashcroft over here. They don't want a scaremonger. They don't want people to get worried. This is a subtle change. It means they will be more vigilant, but it doesn't mean there was anything the public can do. It doesn't mean there was a missile incoming or anything like that. Anyway, interesting thing. The protesters that want to march in London have been negotiating with the police, and they were actually able to get them to agree to let them march past various buildings that they would not have ordinarily let them march past. It's quite a contrast to what you might see here. In fact, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but according to Indy Media, the New York Police Department attacked a peaceful gathering at a Brooklyn community space over the weekend. Listen to this. People attending a fundraising event in Brooklyn were shot early on the morning of November 16th by unprovoked and violent assault at the hands of the New York Police Department. Up to 100 people attending a fundraiser were indiscriminately sprayed with chemical agents, beaten with nightsticks, harassed by a throng of police officers. Witnesses say there was no cause for the assaults and the subsequent arrest following the melee. Now, this is what happened, according to IMC. Approximately 21 marked police vehicles. When was the last time you saw 21 marked police vehicles show up someplace? Well, they all arrived at the Critical Resistance Office, located at 968 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. And that was the location of the fundraising event. And they arrived at around 2 a.m. to investigate an officer's report of someone standing outside the party allegedly holding an open container. Yeah, 21 police cars to investigate someone holding a bottle of beer or something like that? Is that what we're talking about here? Within minutes, the police unleashed their wave of violence onto the crowd, provoking onlookers and beating down attendees who were not resisting their orders. Over 20 people were experiencing effects of the pepper spray that was erratically sprayed into the air by the officers. And the officers also attempted to take the event sign-in sheet. All tenants of the private residential building were present at the event, did not request police assistance, and no one in the building placed a complaint with the precinct or the emergency response system. Witnesses report that no warrant was presented upon police entrance. Organizers responded peacefully to police threats and physical provocation and cooperated with police. And in fact, you know, I've been looking at the story over the past couple of days and seeing back and forth between various people around the world. And if anything, the people here are being criticized for not resisting, for not fighting back. And I think they were very right to not do that because that's how people get shot. When you have, you know, armed thugs kicking in your door and roughhousing you, you do the slightest thing. You tap someone on the shoulder. Hey, you assaulted a police officer. Bang. You're dead. You know, and you don't really gain anything by that, do you? So I think these guys did the right thing. They took the high road. But it didn't stop them from having to pay for it. One witness said, "I was stunned at the severity of the attack. I am genuinely concerned for the safety and well-being of those who are unfairly detained and arrested." Legal counsel at the scene confirmed that at least 8 arrests were made. Preliminary charges include assault, inciting a riot, and resisting arrest. The 77th Precinct, which is where the arrestees were initially held, was unwilling to provide even the smallest information about the status of those arrested. When they were seen, the arrested people had bruised ribs, a spinal injury, severe blows to the head, things like that. And this all at the offices of Critical Resistance. They're a national grassroots group that focuses on prisons and, guess what, police brutality. And they challenge the belief that policing, surveillance, imprisonment, and similar forms of control make our communities safer. I've seen the response firsthand to police when they believe that a group of people is their enemy. And it's not a pretty thing. You don't have to do anything. At the WEF protests about a year and a half ago, it was, I think, February of 2002, it was unbelievable the way that they would simply charge into the crowd and attack people just for standing there. And literally, you know, I was in a crowd at one point. I was simply standing on a sidewalk downtown. And I was more a witness than a participant. I was watching people who were basically protesting in the street. And they were arrested because they were standing in the street. You know? The street was already closed because of all the police cars that were there. But because these people dared to stand in the street, they were arrested. And not in a nice way either. You know, thrown to the ground, stepped on, that kind of a thing. And the cops insisted everybody who wasn't being arrested or wasn't part of the protest stand on the sidewalk. Except they pushed about 100, maybe 200 people into this little tiny area that there was no possible way that that amount of people could fit into. And so people started to fall into the street. And of course, when you got into the street, well, that meant you were part of the protest, so you had to be arrested. And at one point, police were pushing the crowd from one end, and a bunch of us fell into the street, and then we got hit with nightsticks. I got whacked on the knees by some idiot, feeling that he was, fulfilling his duties as a police officer. And it was, it hurt for a month, I gotta tell you. And just, was it yesterday or the day before, we heard that charges were dropped against, I think, 5 cops who killed a guy. I think in Brooklyn. They killed a guy in Brooklyn. I don't have the paperwork in front of me for this one, but apparently they shot him, I think, 12 times because he had a hammer. He had a hammer, and they feared for their life. Their lives, I guess. All 5 of them feared for their lives. Now, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what this situation was actually like. But just thinking about somebody holding a hammer, even if they're completely out of their minds, yeah, they can hurt you. They can hurt you if you're standing there, like maybe with your back to them, and you don't move, and you allow them to get a clear shot on top of your unprotected head. But if you're a cop, you know, you probably have one of those helmets. And even if you don't have the helmets, if you're with 5 other guys or 4 other guys, how much swinging do you think the guy can do before he's subdued? Yeah, you might get clocked on the head once, maybe, if you're clumsy about it. But I think anyone with training would be able to tackle the guy before he was able to, to really do any damage. And if you really feel the need to shoot somebody, shooting to kill? I mean, you know, okay, shoot his feet so he falls down or something and can't charge at you. If you really have to do that, which I don't think you have to do. These guys were let off. These guys are free. I mean, how do you justify that? And it's disturbing, too, that there isn't much opposition against this kind of a thing. I know. The guy was Hasidic. Maybe he's the wrong race or something. It's ridiculous when people pick their battles based on things like that. It doesn't matter. The police are an equal opportunity abuser. They will go after anybody, regardless of color. Yeah, they may go after one color more than another, but it affects everybody, and we have to understand that. There should be like massive demonstrations in the city right now about that kind of a thing. Anyway, that's my little tirade about that, which I hadn't planned on getting into at all. But one thing that I was planning on getting into... Yes, it's what might be our newest weekly feature. Tentatively titled Corporate Intelligence. Last week, if you recall, we ran a little test of the people over at CVS. Asked them if they knew what CVS stood for. And the first person we called did. And much credit to them for having that information at their fingertips. Tonight, though, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. And, you know, I have to admit, this is something that is not very easy to find out. I think, though, if you work for the corporation, though, you should know it. You know, you should know what things stand for. You should know why you work in a place that has a particular name. A little bit about the history, you know? Maybe where something was founded or when it was founded, something like that. How many of you know what the K in Kmart means? Huh? Oh, I'll admit right away, I didn't. All right, I'll tell you right off the bat. The K in Kmart comes from the... and I can't even pronounce this. I don't know how to pronounce it. The name of the Five and Dime parent company that was founded back in 1899 was S.S. Kresge. It's spelled K-R-E-S-G-E. I don't know what that means or how to say it. Kresge. I don't know. But what I'll accept as an answer to this question is it was named after the founder. Okay, that's fine. You don't have to be able to say his name. Or it was named after a 5 and 10 store from the 1800s. Or anything, really. The one thing I will not accept is, I have no idea. Or, I don't care. Or, are you some kind of nut? Those are all answers that I don't consider to be correct, and I won't accept those. All right. Where should we go? Where should we go? How about Jersey? Okay. We're going to go to Jersey. Let's see what the people over there know about their background in Kmart.
Evening, Bricktown Kmart. BJ speaking. Can I help you?
Yes, I'm hoping you can answer a question for me. I'm trying to find out what the K in Kmart stands for. Do you know that?
No, that I don't know. I can put you through to a manager if you'd like.
Would you do that? Thank you.
Sure, hold on.
All right. Not that we like to waste managers' time, but this is certainly something a manager should know. And refer me to the manager, that's a proper thing to do if you don't know the answer yourself. However, if the manager is busy, we are going to move on to another store, and we'll give him maybe three more of these little beeps.
Hi, this is Jerry. May I help you?
Yes, hi. I'm hoping you can help me. I'm just trying to find out what the K stands for in Kmart. Do you have that information?
I believe it's Kresge's.
Kresge, and what is that?
That was the store that Kmart started with.
Oh, really? Okay.
Kmart's were Kresge's stores back in the 50s and, I guess, as early as the 40s. That's how we started, with a Kresge's store. Which was like a Walgreens, like a Macquarie's type store.
Like a 5 and 10?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where was the first Kresge store? It north? Yeah, it was up north somewhere, and then he branched off into, from Kresge it went to Kmart. That's how they did that.
Wow, okay. Thanks very much for all that information.
No problem.
All right, take care.
Bye.
You know, I have to say, I am very impressed and surprised at the amount of knowledge. And I thought we'd have to call all throughout the country. Boy, well, that makes this show a lot easier. Okay. All right, so both CBS and Kmart have come through with flying colors as far as knowing their history. Or maybe we just got lucky and called two stores that had intelligent people in them. If you have suggestions, please, for a way of stumping the corporations, give us... Well, just send us an email, otw@2600.com, or you can call us, 631-632-WUSB. We'll take calls later in the evening if we have time. You know, while looking up this fact, I found all kinds of other facts, too, because this is known as one of those useless facts, which I don't really think is a useless fact. I think it's a pretty useful fact, you know? I mean, when you drive by Kmart next time, which is probably in the next 5 minutes if you're in a car, you'll know now what that K stood for. And, you know, any kind of knowledge, I think, is a good thing, don't you? What if somebody is visiting you from, you know, Turkey or something, and they ask you, what does that mean, and you don't know? You look like a fool, and then you get reported as a fool to all the people back in Turkey when the guy goes back, you know? And it's bad for everybody. Knowledge is a good thing. Anyway, some of these other useless facts. Number of confirmed cases of children injured by sharp objects, that is, needles, pins, razor blades, and Halloween candy, zero. I'm not quite sure what that's based on and how this person knows that it's zero. And this is all unofficial and unscientific. I don't know about this either. In the Schoolhouse Rock short, The Shot Heard Round the World, a naked woman appears at the end in Southern California. There's a lot about Schoolhouse Rock in here for some reason. Which we're going to skip. The maximum number of VHF stations allowed in an area is 7, despite there being a total of 12 channels, if you didn't know that. The Chrysler Corporation Pentastar logo, this is something to ask Chrysler maybe, is supposed to represent what was then their 5 marquees, Plymouth, Dodge, DeSoto, Chrysler, and Imperial. Unfortunately, DeSoto was discontinued shortly before the introduction of the logo, which I guess made the whole thing completely useless. The Volkswagen Beetle was designed by Ferdinand Porsche for Adolf Hitler, who wanted an updated German equivalent of the Model T. All right, how about this one? The circular so-called peace sign was formed by combining the semaphore symbols for the letters N and D, which stood for nuclear disarmament, and enclosing these two symbols in a circle, which stood for containment. Now, the semaphore symbol for N is an up caret. You know, the thing that you use, what do you use that for? If you're like, base 10 or something like that, the little... Yeah, whatever. And D is the pipe on the computer keyboard. So you put those together and then close that in a circle, and that's what that means. Let's see. A lot of this stuff I can't read on the air. Okay, the Library of Congress lists 32 ways to spell Muammar Gaddafi. 32 ways. Yeah. A lab analysis of Kentucky Fried Chicken found only 3 seasoning ingredients, salt, black pepper, and MSG, not 11 herbs and spices. There is properly no period after the doctor in the Dr. Pepper trademark. I'm not quite sure why that's proper. I guess he's not really a doctor. Is that the reason? Dr. Pepper also does not contain cherry, cola, pepper, peppermint, or prune extracts or flavorings. With 10-digit UPC barcodes... The first 5 digits signify the manufacturer of the product. I knew that. The first number on a Visa card is always a 4. I knew that, too. The first number on a MasterCard is always a 5. The first number on an American Express card is always a 3. The first number on a Discover Novus card is always a 6. With Visa cards and MasterCards, the next 3 digits signify the issuing bank. I knew all of that. The United States has issued circulating coins in the following weird denominations. Half cent, 2 cents, 3 cents, 20 cents, $2.50, $3, $5, $10, $20, a commemorative $50 piece, and an experimental $4 piece. And if you have any of those, please send them to us because they're no good anymore. And we'd like to catalog them. Let's see. Okay, we have Thanksgiving coming up soon, so here's a couple on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving as a national holiday was first celebrated in 1863 after much lobbying by the editor of a women's magazine who had contrived a Martha Stewartish set of recipes and decorations for the occasion. That's kind of spooky, isn't it? Thanksgiving was moved up a week by FDR in 1939 in order to add a week to the Christmas shopping season to help or politically favor retailers during the Depression. Thanksgiving was moved back to its present time in 1941 after protests from football coaches who had claimed FDR's earlier move had messed up their football schedules. Okay, and that comes from a GeoCities site. Go to Jabba0017, JABBA0017/JUFD1197.htm at www.geocities.com if you want to read these for yourself. All right, now it's time for our weekly tribute, and you know who it's to.
And now a word from our sponsor, the Evelyn Woodhead Speed Reading Course.
Ever since I took this Evelyn Woodhead Speed Reading Course, my reading has improved 100%, and also comprehension has increased wonderfully. I recommend the Evelyn Woodhead Speed Reading Course to all my friends out there, and you tell them that you heard it here first on Roller Derby.
And yes, that's today's short piece from Cheech and Chong. Our tribute to Tommy Chong languishing in prison for selling bongs on the internet. Boy, still can't believe it. I've said it so many times, and it's unbelievable every time I say it. What are you going to do? Okay, what else do we have here? We have some letters. And we're going to show some pictures. We're going to Lithuania today, for those of you interested in the picture tour of my six-week visit to Europe over the summer, which might sound like the most boring thing in the world, and maybe it is. I don't know. But we've gotten a lot of mail, a lot of positive feedback for this experiment in radio, showing pictures on the radio, which is kind of a cool thing. And for those of you who want to take part, simply go to www.2600.com/off-the-wall, and you will see the link to the pictures there. And for those of you listening on the archive, well, you probably see the link next to the archive. Let's see. We asked a question last week. Last week we went to Kaliningrad, which is the section of Russia that's not attached to Russia, all the way over to the west. Little tiny section, used to be part of East Prussia. And we asked what a piece of graffiti meant, because I certainly couldn't read it. And we had a lot of responses, a lot of responses to this. A lot of people knew the answer. This person writes in, Dear Emmanuel, internet radio is a great thing, especially now that it's also capable of transmitting images. The graffiti on last week's show says, Kaliningrad is a Russian city. How about that? It was rather meaningful graffiti there. Seeing as how Kaliningrad was a German city, and now it's a Russian city, and there's probably some debate as to whether or not that should continue. This person writes in, my brother has spent quite a few years in Russia and sent me the following after I asked him to check out what that graffiti was. And again, it says, Kaliningrad is a Russian city. Kaliningrad is a part of Russia that, due to historical oddities and border shifts around World War II, is now surrounded by Lithuania and Poland. This is causing all sorts of problems. So there you have it. Interesting stuff. Keep on keeping on. Enjoy this wild ride in the days of chaos. And that certainly says it well. P.S. Any idea when some of those older brain damage shows might make an appearance? What can I say? I'm addicted to them. Signed, Meadow. Well, yeah, you know, those brain damage shows. Brain damage, of course, being the show that I did on this radio station back in from the years 1988 to 1995. We have online at the same www.2600.com site everything from 1990 to the end, 1995. We still have 1988 and 1989 to go. It's just a question of finding the time to do all this, because a lot of these tapes have to be repaired. They're old, they squeak, you got to do things to them to make them play right, and capture them and put them onto the internet. it's great to do that. You know, I enjoy hearing them, hearing voices from the past and all that kind of a thing. It's just a question of finding enough time to do it. And, of course, you know, I guess the more people that nudge us, the more we'll be inclined to do something. So the address, otw@2600.com. We'll do the best we can. This person wrote to the wrong address. I have to stress, people, do not write to oth@2600.com. That's for the other radio show. That's for Off the Hook, which is not on tomorrow. So don't get your hopes up for that. It's on next week, though. I'm not sure if we're on here next week. I know there's a basketball game scheduled for next week. I believe it starts at 6:50. It might start earlier. I'm not sure. So check the website. If we have any updates on that, we'll let you know. But I believe we're on next week. Anyway, this person wrote to the wrong mailbox, but we're going to read it anyway, as long as he never does that again. Dear Off the Hook, meaning Off the Wall, I've been thinking about last week's show, and actually this was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, there's a week delay if you write to the wrong mailbox, too. Yeah, that happens. I take your point about there being more people to voice Reagan's point of view, but I think the bottom line is that people who watch Takedown and the Reagan program you mentioned are going to think this is how things happened. This did worry me a little, not because I disagreed with you, but that it seemed like you were saying one thing from Mitnick, but taking a different point of view when it was someone else. Please tell me why I'm wrong on this, or should that be why you think I'm... Well, it's all confusing here. Signed, Beowulf, anyway. Yeah, we were talking about the Reagan film, which I understand has been scheduled for November 30th on Showtime now. It was supposed to be on CBS, and after all the controversy, was pulled from CBS and is now going to be seen on Showtime. In its original state, I believe. And we were comparing this to what happened back in 1998 with the Kevin Mitnick situation, where they were making a film called Takedown, which I just got another copy of, by the way, from Australia. Yeah, apparently it was released in Australia. And this way I don't have to watch the French version with all the subtitles. Not that I watch it all that often, but it's kind of good to have a reference copy on hand. Takedown being the film about Kevin Mitnick, which we found to be libelous, untrue, and... defamatory, and we launched a protest against it, made our own documentary called Freedom Downtime, which kind of chronicles that whole thing. So what's the difference between people preventing a film from getting on the air because it says or implies bad things about Reagan and this kind of a thing? Well, I can see where people would see a big similarity, but what you have to look at, you have to look at the power of the people behind certain movements. Now, Kevin Mitnick was not a very powerful person. Ronald Reagan was the most powerful person on earth. And when you're a public figure, when you're somebody who, you know, is the leader of the free world, you're open to a lot more interpretations of your actions than a private citizen who is currently being victimized, rightfully or wrongfully, depending on your point of view, by the federal government that is being imprisoned and not able to defend themselves. I think that's a big difference between an individual citizen having a film made about them where they're shown doing things. They're shown hitting people with garbage can lids. They're shown cheating in ways they never cheated, or basically committing the crimes that they were accused of and have pleaded not guilty to. You know, that kind of a thing I think you have to speak up against. Now, whether Ronald Reagan said that people with AIDS got what they deserved, or whether he didn't say that, okay, you know, that's a matter of interpretation. You don't know if he said it or not. And I can see people being offended who like this guy. In fact, when we were talking about this, and I wasn't even criticizing Reagan at the time, I was just basically defining this. We were getting angry calls from people saying, how dare you? Well, you know, it's that kind of attitude that I think needs to be challenged a bit. Yeah, we dare, you know, we dare criticize this guy. We dare put words into his mouth because, you know, we don't know if he said that or not. But his actions certainly indicate that he thought that. This is a guy that didn't lift a finger to help anybody with AIDS. He never even said the word during his 8 years in office. You know, so whether or not he just never talked about it at all, or whether he said that they're getting what they deserve, to me, it doesn't really matter. Actions speak louder. And I think that's a big difference between somebody accused of looking at, you know, at computer code and having a film made about them where they're shown being physically violent and racist and all that kind of thing. You know, I think it's a big difference and something that we had to protest, and I'm pretty happy that we did that. And the film came out anyway. You know, we never said don't put out the film. We just said, you know, get it right if you're going to do something like this. The film came out, never in this country, though. All right, enough about that. Now let's do our Lithuania thing. Now, We have a different sound. There's been a lot of negative feedback about the sound that we've been using to change slides. So I'd like to do something a little serious this week. Okay, we had the face being smacked. We had all kinds of, like, weird sounds that were more distracting than helpful. We had a dial tone, which the phone company got very upset at. So let's do something a little bit less distracting so we can just go from slide to slide. Again, our pictures are at 2600.com/off the wall. If you're listening in your car, don't fret. You can always go home and get on the Internet and look at it there. Or you can just listen to the sound of my voice and imagine what I'm describing. All right? Oh, no. That's it? No, I don't think so. I don't think I want that. Hang on, I'm gonna move this somewhere else. I don't like the sound. A dog barking? Is that really the best we can do? You know, okay, we're running out of time, so I guess we're gonna have to settle for that. All right. Let's press the right buttons here. Oh, I like that one better. Can we use that one? Yeah, let's use... Okay. That's better. Let's use that one instead. I still think it's appropriate to have a dog barking between pictures. Okay. Now, I hope everybody's at the right page. Is everybody there? Okay. We're in Lithuania now. Lithuania being the next stop after Kaliningrad. Now, if you recall, last week I described Kaliningrad as being a bit scary. We had the big, ugly, Stony Brook-looking building there in the middle of town that was never finished, and was a big, like, sort of Stalinist type of a thing. And, you know, it was just a very alien environment. The people were friendly, the people were fine, and it was mostly my neuroses that led me to be so happy to be away from there. So when I arrived in Vilnius, in Lithuania, it was like a dream. It really was a nice, picturesque town, pristine condition, smattering of English. You know, I for the first time in a long time, I was hearing English being spoken by many tourists who were walking around the streets. Now, this is the first of three Baltic states that I went to, and I'm deliberately separating the states because people tend to lump them together. You know, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, they're all different. They're all unique, and they're all definitely worth checking out. So this week we're looking at Vilnius in Lithuania. Here we see a picture of a payphone. Yes, I know, we always take pictures of payphones. It's important, you know, someone has to document these things. And you see a very nice little... Everything in that picture is very colorful. The payphone is colorful, the payphone booth is colorful, the truck driving past the payphone is colorful, the church in the background. You know, I swear, the architecture there... Every building is so incredibly clean, it looks like it's not even real. It looks like it's made out of some kind of, you know, toy material. But I think this pretty much captures, you know, the cleanness of that particular place and just the overall picturesque look. Okay. All right. It's a little distracting, but I guess we'll survive. This is a close-up of the payphone. Nice blue color. You know, I don't know what it is about this country, why we can't have payphones that look nice. You know, they're always so drab. It's kind of like our trains, you know. Our trains look drab, too. I mean, look at the Long Island Railroad. It's, you know, the trains are silver. And it just, to me, it just looks really, I don't know, bland. But if you go to places like Holland or Germany, they're yellow, they're, you know, orange, red, blue, all kinds of bright colors. It makes a difference. It really does. I don't know, maybe we should paint the payphones, I don't know. Okay, here's another picture of one of those churches, and there are so many of them in Vilnius, all different kinds, all different denominations, and they're all meticulously taken care of. You can see there's tourists walking around, selling paintings, just taking in the sights. It's a kind of place that you can just simply walk around as people are doing on this street. This is one of the main tourist-type streets. You see people walking inside the street as well. But that doesn't mean that cars don't go barreling down there as well. And bicycles. It's amazing. You know, people don't get hit. I don't know why. But vehicles were going down every few minutes at rather high speeds, and people just sort of made way for them. But that's one of the main streets. In fact, the place I stayed, I found a really cheap hotel. It was one of those buildings on the third floor, I believe. You know, It's a very cheap place to go to, but very much like Western Europe, as far as the things you can see and do and witness. This is another very tall church building in town, and just one of the indications of the many different kinds of architecture that that are present in Vilnius. And also a lot of statues. This statue in particular I thought was kind of funny. It's one of the founding knights of that particular part of the world. But it looks to me like he's being pushed off a cliff by a horse. I don't know if that's a common interpretation, but simply the way it looks. Over here we're by the National Museum, and also the castle, which is being rebuilt. And this is one of these tremendous tremendous squares that you can find in cities like this. Keep in mind, Lithuania was a Soviet state for quite a few years, and so you have a lot of Soviet influence as well as independent spirit, and that's something that I think is found in almost every part of life in Vilnius, and also the other Baltic republics as well. Okay, we get a little closer to this building. You may wonder why. Focus on the staircase, and as we get to the next picture, you see that there's a piece of graffiti there for none other than the Sex Pistols, which I thought was kind of cool. Yes, graffiti is everywhere. Here we see some construction going on for the castle. I think we have a closer picture a little bit later. And also on top of the hill, this is a building I regret not going to. There's a little point where you can stand and look out over the city. I just wasn't there long enough to be able to get all the way up there and join those people. We're on picture 11 right now, by the way. And this is a statue, which I guess wouldn't be permitted in our country because it has bare breasts. But it's basically someone proclaiming liberty. Oh, look, there's somebody holding on to her feet, too, below. Yeah. Just someone with outstretched arms appearing to be quite happy, I guess. And as you can see, that's on top of a structure. And if you look closer, I apologize for this noise, really. You see that structure is on top of a building, and the building, again, is pristine color and quite nice. One rather disturbing part of town, though, is the number of American-based ads. And this ad, if you do a close-up on it, you'll see that that's a Clear Channel billboard. And I don't quite know what this is an ad for. It looks like it's an ad for themselves. And basically it says, and I'm not sure if this is what it's supposed to say, but this is what it says. I mean, it looks like it's English, but I'm not sure if that's the way it's supposed to be translated. An ad we trust. A play on In God We Trust, but putting ad in place of God. I'm not quite sure, how important these people have considered themselves to be. Now, I mentioned the Soviet influence, and here's a good example of that, the ugly apartment buildings that you see in various areas. Every Soviet city has this in one area or another, every former Soviet city, and Vilnius is certainly no exception to that. Now, here we see by the Royal Palace. I'll read this for the people that don't have pictures in front of them. The Royal Palace of the Vilnius Lower Castle was the political, administrative, and cultural center of Lithuania. The oldest brick and stone foundations in the country, which date from the 13th century, were found here. The palace was renowned throughout Europe for its library and art collection. The first opera performances in Lithuania were also staged here in the 17th century. The Royal Palace will be rebuilt by 2009 in time for the celebration marking the millennium anniversary of the earliest known mention of Lithuania in written records. The palace will serve as a center for official functions, cultural, and educational events. We invite you to support this historic restoration. I guess what they mean by that is we invite your money. It's actually turned into quite a controversy over in Vilnius because so much money is being devoted to this that people are beginning to question the wisdom of it. And this is a close-up of the construction site. You can see that sign says, don't drive your car in here. There's the castle in the background where you can stand on top of and look over the city. Oh, boy, this... All right, you may wonder why I took a picture of this. This is a close-up of some food I had. They have these big, giant blintz-type things that they're very... they're very popular, I guess, in that part of the world. This gave me indigestion for 2 days. It was so big and heavy and thick. You know, to this day, I gotta move past it because it just... Ugh, the sight of that. Yeah, everything else about the town was great, but, you know, I made the mistake of getting this one big, heavy... It looked like a space alien. And it just sat in my stomach like, you know, like a $5 piece. Really, it did. For a couple of days. And, all right. You learn. You know, you live and you learn. All right. The next picture is another very attractive-looking church. One of so many different kinds. An apartment building that has all kinds of little satellite dishes. And here's one of the most amazing parts of the city. A Frank Zappa monument. Yeah, they have a statue of Frank Zappa over there to the left, and they have a little mural with Frank Zappa's face on it. Why Vilnius? Why not? People of Vilnius wanted a Frank Zappa monument, and they got it. Why don't we get things like this? I know they're renaming a part of New York City for Joey Ramone, I think, a week from Sunday, which will be cool. But look what you have to go through. And we're picture 22. That's the bust of Frank Zappa. Picture of the synagogue in Vilnius. Yes, they have a synagogue, and unlike many of the other ones I've seen, this one is very well maintained. One of the electric buses that pervade the city. And the historic TV tower. Looks like a normal TV tower. And you go up to the top of it, you can see over the city for many, many miles. And in this section, you can see all the ugly buildings that were built in the Soviet times. But there is a more somber note to the TV tower. If you see this picture here, this is a picture of a tank in the early 90s approaching the TV tower. When the people of Vilnius decided that they wanted to be independent from the Soviet Union, back in the days of Glasnost, well, the Soviets responded with force. And the first place they went was the TV tower because that's where they were transmitting. And that's always where they go. And that's why broadcasters are always the first to be lined up and shot. I mean, to be to keep in mind here. At the bottom of the TV tower is a memorial to all the people who died defending the TV tower. Most of them young people who just happened to be there and were run over by tanks. And it was one of the dark days, one of the dark last days of the Soviet Empire. And this final picture is the other piece of that memorial with a picture of the tank approaching the TV tower. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. And there's always this underlying, note of somberness in these places because they've fought for their freedom fairly recently and it means something to them. It's affected them. It's affected them personally. It's something that I think a lot of us here might forget. So that's our sped-up tour of Vilnius in Lithuania. Next time, I guess we'll see part of Latvia. We still have Estonia, Finland, and, of course, Russia to go through. Boy, this trip is going to take a year to document, isn't it? Yeah. And that's the end of this hour for us. Blues is up next, and we'll see you, I think, next week. Depending on what the deal with this basketball game is, we'll know in a couple of days, probably. Until then, Emmanuel Goldstein, we'll... See you when we see you. Good night. Thank you.
Derek Trucks from the Derek Trucks Band, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.